Hi, I'm Kim Cotola. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. There are many more podcasts available online at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
And we are so pleased that you have carved out time to be with us. I know that it's a meaningful use of your time. There are so many entertainment options, and there are so many ways that we could inform ourselves, because hopefully we're presenting the conversation in an entertaining way. But obviously our purpose here is not to entertain, but to educate and to inform. And really, to take it beyond that, as our theme music says, to heal the heart. Not only after abortion, but there are those who considered abortion and chose life who still need healing as well. Maybe from the circumstances of the unplanned pregnancy, maybe from the reaction of people around, maybe from having contemplated abortion. There are so many reasons why we may need healing after an unplanned pregnancy. And we're here to offer that. And of course, the only way that that happens is through embracing biblical truth. When Jesus comes, our hearts are healed, and it happens supernaturally. And it's something that's available to every one of his followers. It's not that I'm a special person and I'm healed. This is Christ's plan for us. And that's what we're here to discuss. And I'm so pleased to be able to welcome to the program someone who has been able to share that message, because she has lived that message as well. Jules Green is our guest this time. She's a pro-life advocate, speaker, and writer. Jules, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Also on your resume is the fact that you worked for a time in the abortion industry, and maybe that's where we ought to start the story about how that job came about and how it impacted you.
Well, Kim, I think we need to go back a little bit before that, because in hindsight, I believe I ended up working in the abortion industry as a misguided attempt to justify my role in the death of my first child by abortion. When I found myself, you know, a pregnant teenager, I actually didn't want an abortion. It never crossed my mind. However, those around me had very different ideas for me. I wish I would have known back then even one person who was pro-life, even if just one person would have said, you know what, you're strong enough, you can do this, or let me help you. I don't think my life would have taken the trajectory it did. So before even, you know, working in the industry, I had my own personal traumatic experience with a coerced abortion. I mean, the first time I went to the clinic for my own abortion, I couldn't do it. I ran out of the facility in a vain attempt to save my baby's life, and only to, you know, face mounting pressure at home and end up back at that same facility 2 days later and experiencing a first trimester surgical abortion when I was 17 years old, and I was about 9.5 weeks along. And I have to tell you that abortion nearly ended my life, not the surgery, but the psychological and emotional aftermath, Kim, was swift and severe. Within a couple of weeks, I attempted suicide and ended up in a psychiatric hospital for almost a month. And it was after leaving the hospital that I sought involvement in the abortion rights movement and eventually employment at an abortion clinic. So you sort of see my trajectory there. Do you know what I mean?
Like, well,
I guess, as I mentioned before, I guess in hindsight, I took that job at the clinic in an attempt to justify what I'd gone through.
Well, thank you. And that context is crucial. It's absolutely crucial. And, you know, the way that you portray your story, one thing totally jumps out at me, Jules, because we've talked a lot on this program, and I've written about it and spoken in other forum about this APA Task Force on Abortion and Mental Health, which came out in 2008, finding that abortion does not have any detrimental impact on a first-time, first-trimester abortion. Your experience says something very different. They would argue back that you had problems in your mental health before the abortion. Was that true on any level, that you were a depressed person?
Well, there's a couple of points I want to make, too, about that study. And one is that I don't think they followed the women long enough. And two, yes, I actually was a troubled teen at the time of my abortion. But even then, don't you think, and you may agree with me on this, and I think you will, that the abortion industry, you know, has a duty to the women coming in seeking their services to find out if they're already troubled, to screen for depression or domestic violence, or any of these, pre-existing conditions. Yes, I agree. I was a high school dropout, drug user, shacked up with my boyfriend. I was not, a model student who just, oops, got pregnant. However, I did have that swift and severe, kickback immediately following my abortion because I also wasn't screened for coercion. You know what I'm saying? And when I left the clinic, as I described to you, and then came back 2 days later, nobody asked me, so why'd you leave? Or why'd you come back?
Right.
What happened in the 2 days in between? Do you feel safe at home? These are things that I believe, rest in the responsibility of the abortion industry.
Sure.
And also, once I, considered myself okay after getting out of the psychiatric hospital, it took years and years for me to really take a long, hard look at those wounds that were created. So even if I'd been interviewed for that study, maybe I would have said, hey, I'm okay. And we hear that from a lot of women who seek healing, say, through Rachel's Vineyard, or that it took years and years for their hearts to, open up and then to heal.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I appreciate the candor of, saying that, okay, look, maybe I was a troubled teen, but I guess what I want to draw a fine point on this because you're right, they didn't study the women long enough, and that top line conclusion that there's no adverse risk to mental health refutes everything that the study actually showed. I mean, they just put that out as a talking point. And so what I want to ask you is, had you been suicidal before the abortion?
No.
See, this is what people need to understand.
Right. I had absolutely had my ups and downs. And they may have been, more so than, again, a regular teenager who's upset about a breakup or an F on a test. And I do admit that. However, nothing could have prepared me for the maelstrom that happened, after acquiescing to pressure from other people to participate in the death of my first child.
Well, and Jules, it's a very brave testimony because you're leaving yourself open to further criticism from abortion rights advocates that the problem is you. And I stand with you in rejecting that premise. I stand with you in saying, no, the thing is the thing. The abortion was the problem. Jules Green is our guest. She's a writer and speaker, and she had an abortion at 17, as she has shared with us, and then went to work in the abortion industry. And you have a unique perspective because of that. I want to, by the way, let you know that Jules' ministry and her work is linked at cradlemyheart.org, so you'll be able to find her books there. She's a featured contributor to We Choose Life, Authentic Stories, Movements of Hope. And she's also the author of Abortion Hurts, a collection of essays on my journey from death to life. And it's a very remarkable recovery. And I God for it, Jules, because the coercion is also something that no woman should ever have to experience, but it is very common, if not happening in the majority of cases, whether it's forcible or whether it's subtle. There is a great deal of coercion that goes on in the name of choice. So there you are. Talk about working in the abortion industry with this difficulty and with this, you know, history that you had.
Well, it's counterintuitive that I would, you know, survive such a traumatic experience and then, you know, come out of it a reproductive rights advocate. I mean, it sounds like with what I went through, I would be a diehard pro-lifer after that. Like, oh my gosh, look what I just went through. I want to make sure this happens to nobody else. And precisely the opposite happened. And as I've mentioned before, I think I was trying to justify, what I had gone through. And essentially, if I chose to surround myself with people who thought abortion was okay, maybe I'd believe that too someday. So within a couple of weeks of leaving the hospital, I'm marching in Washington, D.C. in support of a woman's right to choose an abortion. And what happened was is I started volunteering as an escort at a first trimester abortion clinic that summer. Again, the summer right after my abortion and suicide attempts. And by the end of the year, I was hired full-time. And again, as I mentioned before, when I look back, I was hoping that maybe I could help people from the inside. I know that deep down there, you know, I never stopped missing my baby. I never stopped kicking myself for not being strong enough to save him, for not being strong enough to save myself. And I almost saw it as a type of penance. Okay, I'm going to work in the abortion industry, and I'm going to try to help people for real. And, you know, being inside the walls where, you know, where death is a daily occurrence, it's not something that's easy to describe to folks who are lifelong pro-lifers. I mean, we truly believed, everyone working there truly believed that we were offering a necessary, much maligned service to these women. And I bought that line, hook, line, and sinker. It was something that if we weren't there, these poor women would be on the sidewalk bleeding from illegal abortions, which, you know, you and I both know those numbers were inflated from prior to Roe v. Wade. But it was really, really hard with those blinders on to even see that we weren't offering any other choice but death. If a woman came to the Women's Center where I worked, the abortion facility, and said to me when I was a pre-abortion counselor, you know, I'm thinking about adoption. I don't know if I want to be here. Can you tell me about adoption? I wasn't able. I mean, we weren't trained to describe the difference between open and closed adoption or kinship care or any of those things. You know, choice really was a euphemism. And, you know, as you know, still is.
Jules Green is our guest. And, yeah, I mean, I think that the way that you framed it makes a lot of sense, actually, trying to, right, because whenever we suffer trauma, there is usually an unconscious attempt to master it. And sometimes people mm-hmm. think, you know, wait a minute, if you're traumatized, why are you putting yourself more at risk? Well, we're trying to overcome that fear, and then that makes the original wound less fearful, I guess, if I could mm-hmm. put it in terms as my, I understand it as a layman. And so that makes a lot of sense that you would be there. And it also, Jules, I mean, even back to recent political discussions about women and how women need abortion and it's compassionate care and we need to trust women. And the emphasis on women, while obliterating the reality of the humanity of the unborn, makes it very easy for us to see that that a lot of people who are there think that they are helping because they have been deceived and mm-hmm. make an assumption that the unborn are not also human. And then let's talk about that, because I know that you are a Christian. I think were not a Christian at the time of the abortion and some of these earlier experiences. I don't want to tell your story, but let's talk about that, about the humanity of the unborn and why, you know, how things have so dramatically changed for you from being you know, suffering a coerced abortion to willingly working in the abortion industry to now being 100% pro-life.
Well, you're absolutely right. Although I was raised in a Christian home, and I went to Sunday school in a Lutheran church every Sunday, even through my teen years. I mean, I didn't stop going to church until right around 16. And then, you know, when I fell from the faith, I fell fast and I fell hard. And working in the abortion facility, there were many folks there who were nominally Christian. I would not have counted myself among them. Now, in terms of, you know, recognizing the humanity of the unborn and attempting to shield oneself of that reality or shield the patients, the women who are coming in, from that reality, I mean, I think you also hit the nail on the head when you said, okay, you've got this traumatic experience. Why are you back in there? Well, maybe I was trying to desensitize myself to it as well. One thing I do want to share with you is at the time I was working in the abortion facility, ultrasounds were not standard on every pregnant woman prior to an abortion the way they are now. A woman did see a doctor and have a pelvic exam to determine, you know, to guesstimate the length of gestation of her pregnancy. However, even then, you know, women aren't stupid. They come in, they know they're pregnant with a baby, you know, but the way the abortion industry uses euphemisms like the pregnancy or, you know, the tissue, I'm sure you've heard these before, you know, and my personal favorite was always the contents of your uterus. You know, it's not something that is addressed with the patient. Now, as an employee of an abortion facility, there's no denying it. There's absolutely no denying it. I mean, when the videos came out from David DeLeiden and the Center for Medical Progress last summer, you know, absolutely, that is absolutely what it looked like in the autoclave room. That is absolutely what postmortem exam after an abortion looks like. There's absolutely no denying the validity of those, of that footage. Now, what happened for me personally is once I started to be tasked with working more in the medical portion of the abortion facility, I started to get nightmares. And this was real. It was vivid, and I was really shaken. And so I met with the director of the facility at the time. Now, I'd been working there for a couple of years at this point, without really much trouble. I mean, I still remember the anniversary of my abortion and the anniversary of my due date, and I didn't want an abortion. But when these nightmares started as a worker, you know, I met with the director and I said, you know, does anybody else get nightmares about what we do here? And she said, she was compassionate in dealing with me, but Kim, she looked at me and she said, what we do here is end a life. It's basic. And if you're not okay with that, you can't work here. So they know what's going on. Everyone inside of the facility knows precisely what is going on. You'll never hear the clump of cells argument from someone who's worked in the medical area of an abortion facility. You know, she rotated me out of the medical area for a while. I did some counseling, some blood pressures, birth control teaching. And a couple weeks later, she said, so are you okay with it? Are you okay with what we do here? And God help me, I said yes. And I stayed working there day after day, year after year. I mean, I really wish I could tell you that I had a profound aha, you know, road to Damascus kind of a conversion, you know. I really wish I had, but I didn't. After those, you know, after that nightmare, you know, those nightmares I had, and after that talk I had with her, I didn't have any more trouble working at the abortion clinic, except when we started to go a little bit into the second trimester. Then I started to get a little queasy, and I probably should have listened to those feelings. But I did not, I only left the abortion facility because I got into grad school in New York City. And even then, as you mentioned before, I wasn't a Christian yet. I left to, you know, for higher education. And I never thought about abortion again until many years later.
So it sounds like, too, your youth was a big part of being in that job. I mean, it sounds like there was not a lot of maturity and discernment that had gone into it. It was like, well, this is where I work, and now I need a job. That there might have been some of that aspect to it as well.
Well, not only that, but, you know, so here I am. When I was hired, I was like 18 and a half, and I was surrounded in this facility by intelligent, well-educated, resourceful, independent, strong women. And I emulated them. I wanted to be like them. And I felt like it was a stroke of luck to get hired into a job in this that wasn't just a job. It was also a cause, you know, and I was wrapped up in that. And I felt emboldened by having a job that wasn't just a job. While my friends were working at the drive-through window at McDonald's, I was working in a medical facility that provided abortion care, you know. And in terms of my youth, most definitely, I was swept up in that. Absolutely.
Jules Green is our guest. We have all of her materials, her writing and speaking, and some of the media interviews that she's been engaged in. She's also part of the 40 movie. It's all linked at cradlemyheart.org if you want to learn more about Jules' outreach. Let's talk about that project. Because you now are a pretty prolific writer and speaker on this issue, and I think it's pretty safe to say, like me, this is a cause for you as well, the cause for life. So there have been a number of pretty important projects that you've worked on. Tell me a little bit more about the 40 film.
The 40 film is a remarkable look at lamenting, rather, 40 years of legalized abortion in the United States, and it came out a couple of years ago. And what I find most remarkable about it is while many folks in the pro-life movement, names you know, Joe Scheidler, Father Frank Cavone, are interviewed in the 40 film, as well as some voices from the, you know, pro-abortion rights side. Very little of it talks about God and about spiritual healing. This is a film, the 40 film, can reach folks who might shut down when you try to, you know, share the gospel. You know, we've got to save lives before we save souls. Is somehow how I like to put it. And that's what I think is so remarkable about the 40 film is, the filmmakers spoke with Kelsey Hazard, who's the head of secular pro-life in America. They spoke with Chris Kruneski, who's the head of secular humanists for life. And it really provides a straightforward perspective on coming to the pro-life view from a biological, scientific, and embryological standpoint. And in that respect, I think we might catch people who may otherwise put the blinders on when we start to talk about God. I mean, obviously, you and I both know that's the only, you know, Christ is the only way you're going to find true healing. But that's what I found so interesting about participating in the 40 film. And really, it wasn't until going through my process, my own conversion experience, that I really truly understood that, you know, what makes abortion fundamentally wrong on every level is that we are each created in God's own image and likeness. And Kim, I want to tell you about my conversion experience. Can I tell you about that?
Sure, please. I was going to say, but I want to underline what you've said, though, about the fact that we can do this outreach without the faith message, because it's a true outreach, that the Bible doesn't have to say abortion is wrong for us to know abortion is wrong, because the Bible says thou shalt not kill, and abortion takes an innocent human being's life. Therefore, it's morally wrong. You know, and so I want everybody listening to feel absolutely confident with that. You don't have to use a Bible verse. You don't even have to say God or the Bible. You can just say that this is morally wrong, because everybody knows in their hearts that it's wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. So, the 40 film, I think, approaches it as a human rights issue, and I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because it's important for us to absorb as many of those resources as we can. So, yes, but now please do share how everything changed for you, the great after. We've only got about 2 minutes. We've got about 2 minutes remaining, Jules, for the best part of the story, but we're just going to have to schedule part two. Will you agree to come back and join us for that, Jules?
Certainly, certainly.
Okay, because it's a compelling story.
My pleasure, Kim. I look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, Jules. And now stay with us. Coming up here on Faith Radio, we'll open the phones for our live segment at 1-800-811-3003. Take a look at some of the pro-life issues in the news this week and your phone calls here on Cradle My Heart Radio.
Safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
So good to have you with us this evening, and I am feeling better, although that didn't sound all that great. Forgive me. Good evening, Kim Cotola. Welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio. Thank you for making us a part of your Sunday evening. We are live here on this 16th day of October. And I don't know if you marked the day yesterday that was International Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Day. That happens every year on October 15th. And if you have experienced the death of a child before birth or shortly afterwards, you know that it's a really difficult thing still in our culture. And so I want to extend our thoughts and prayers and let you know that we care and we understand about this. One of the great interviews that we have been able to present happened back in 2014. Her name is Becky Thompson, and she writes a real popular mommy blog called Scissortail Silk. And she wrote very eloquently not only about a miscarriage that she went through, I think after her second or third child had already been born, but also she wrote very passionately about how abortion has changed the discussion of miscarriage and how denying the humanity of the unborn for the sake of abortion disenfranchises the grief of everyone who suffers a miscarriage as well. As you see, if it's not a baby, since it's not wanted, then it's not a baby at that stage of development with a miscarriage, even if it is wanted. This was the point that she was trying to make about this crazy cultural moment that we find ourselves in, when people who are rejecting faith and standing on science are ignoring the scientific truth that life begins at conception. It's a completely insane cultural moment. You realize that, right? And so Becky Thompson, I urge you to go to cradlemyheart.org and look in the archives for that. She started to bring, and I think that, you know, for a woman who's experienced miscarriage of a very wanted pregnancy, to open her heart to those who suffer after abortion, I think it really bespeaks her faith.
She withholds judgment. You know, she doesn't know whether after an abortion somebody's been coerced. Maybe someone was completely ignorant. Maybe they were desperate and felt they had no choice. She just really opened her heart to the whole question. And it did such a fabulous job of thinking it through and writing about it. And it really served. I mean, I haven't experienced miscarriage myself. But I really want to encourage you that if that is something that you struggle with in particular, I think this thing would be a real blessing to you. Or just look for her article because, oh my goodness, back in 2014, it had been viewed over 100,000 times. It's called, just Google How Abortion Has Changed the Discussion of Miscarriage. And the reason why I bring this up tonight is because I want to talk about a story that's in the news. There has been a trend after the Center for Medical Progress brought to light what happens to the fetal remains after an abortion with their undercover videos of Planned Parenthood's practices selling those remains 1 year ago. Many states responded by enacting new laws calling for dignified handling of those remains. And guess who's really, really, really opposed to that? Abortion activists. Very opposed to dignified burials of babies killed in abortion. There's a story on lifenews.com this week, and this new trend of legislation regulating the handling of aborted babies' bodies has abortion rights activists in an uproar. See, 28 states have said, well, wait a minute. Right now, before this information came to light, many states had no policy or procedure in place to treat fetal remains as human remains. They were treated as medical waste. Minnesota was one of the first states to regulate this back in the 1980s, and I'm familiar with some of the people that were involved in that, and it was contentious at the time. How dare you give dignity? But now 28 states have introduced legislation to regulate the handling of aborted babies in the past year after those videos exposed Planned Parenthood's operation. Some states have moved to ban the sale or donation of aborted baby parts, while others put forward legislation to require that their tiny bodies be cremated or buried. Abortion activists are complaining. The new regulations add cost, administrative work for abortion clinics. However, their biggest problem appears to be that it draws attention to the humanity of the unborn child. To me, this is, why would they care if a person is grieving and wants to treat that with dignity? Why would they care? Well, I guess, again, it goes back to casting their business in a distinctly undignified light. I don't know. But to me, the insensitivity toward women is off the chart. And I think it's really inexcusable to grieving women. 1-800-811-3003 is our number, and we are live. And in honor of Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Day, we do have a copy of the Hope in the Morning Bible for our callers tonight. And maybe you don't have a story to share about miscarriage or infant loss. I hope not. You know, it's such a sad circumstance when these things occur. But this International Day has been on the calendar since 1988. I believe it was started by Ronald Reagan. And it's for everyone who has suffered a pregnancy loss, including but not limited to miscarriage, stillbirth, SIDS, death of a newborn. Again, many people have found this a very comforting observance after abortion, especially if it was coerced, if the choice was taken from them. And so we have this great resource, the Hope in the Morning Bible, at 1-800-811-3003. But rather than requesting a story, please feel free to share one with us. What I'd like for you to share is your favorite Bible verse that brings you comfort in a time of overwhelming sadness. Because to me, when we get together and share the verses that fulfill that purpose, I'm always surprised. I always learn new verses. Whenever we encounter old favorites, that's great, and that's encouraging too. But join us with a Bible verse that has brought you comfort at a time of deep, deep sadness. 1-800-811-3003 is our number. 1-800-811-3003. Kim Cotola, and this is Cradle My Heart Radio, and we're talking about Pregnancy and Infant Loss Remembrance Day. And, you know, I think that there was some news, by the way, about the Center for Medical Progress. In Orange County, the Orange County Register reported, I believe on Wednesday and Thursday of last week, that an indictment was issued for one of the brokers who bought the fetal tissue from Planned Parenthood. The charge, which the DA was careful to say was not political, was that they were profiteering, which is against the federal law. California District Attorney alleges fetal harvesters are illegally profiting. California District Attorney filed a criminal lawsuit against two companies that deal in the parts of aborted fetuses Tuesday, alleging the research firms are illegally profiting from the sale of unborn baby parts. Da Vinci Biosciences and DV Biologics used fetal tissue obtained by Planned Parenthood and other providers to run a profit-driven business, according to the Orange County Register, as I said. The OCDA expected to, at a press conference, said, again, this was not politically motivated. They accused the Yorba Linda, California companies of profiting from at least 500 sales of aborted baby parts and stem cells between 2012 and 2015, charging more than what it cost them to handle and ship the human tissue. And that's the way in which they broke the federal law. The DA, Tony Rakakis, emphasized in a press conference, it's not about politics. He said, we're simply charging DV Biologics and Da Vinci Biosciences and a father and his two sons with illegally selling hundreds of fetal tissue products for profit, that is, and treating human parts as commodities. Instead of giving it the respect the law intended, it's aimed to take the profit out of selling body parts. They tripled their revenue between 2009 and 2011 after they expanded to offer the parts and stem cells. And the DA's office said the company sold the tissue to pharmaceutical companies, academic institutions across the world. And it's a real vindication that what David DeLeiden alleges was actually taking place. And I know that when stories like this come up, and, you know, it can be extremely traumatic if we have lost an infant or a little one. And yet, at the same time, I think very hopeful, because someone has stood up in their defense. Someone has shown a light and said, this must stop. And to me, that's extremely encouraging. Extremely encouraging. So if you have a Bible verse to share that's brought you comfort in a time of sadness or loss, 1-800-811-3003 is our number. 1-800-811-3003. At Bible study at church today, we were talking about the literary form so often used by the Hebrew writers of the scriptures to bury the lead, as we would say in journalistic writing. You know, to bury the lead is to put the main idea of the story 3-4 paragraphs deep into it. Well, this is what all the Hebrew writers did. You had to go to the very middle of the particular document that you're working on to find the most important aspect of it. And in Psalm 23, we see one of the most comforting verses in Scripture. For you are with me. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. What is a verse that has brought you comfort in a time of sadness and loss? Share it with us for a chance to win the Hope in the Morning Bible tonight here at Cradle My Heart Radio, 1-800-811-3003.
a safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
Thanks so much for being with us tonight. When you join us on the phone tonight, we have a chance for you to win the Hope in the Morning Bible. This is a Bible that Zondervan put out years ago, I guess a couple of years ago, and I contributed some articles to it, commentaries on various scriptures, as well as some other very well-known writers. And would love to get a copy of this into your hands. It's a resource and a wonderful gift. I think the tagline, the cell line for the Bible is, when a greeting card and a casserole just won't do. You know, sometimes there is nothing but scripture that we can offer to the person who has been devastated by a loss, who is mourning, who is in the throes of grief. And our culture doesn't do grief very well. We really don't. We expect everybody to bounce back immediately. We're very uncomfortable. We don't know what to say. This is just a great resource. We'd love to get one to you. Just share a Bible verse with us that has brought you comfort in a time of sadness and loss. 1-800-811-3003. 800-811-3003 is our number, and would love to have your voice in the conversation tonight. Another verse along with Psalm 23:4 is Romans 8:37. I, various times in my life, have tried to memorize Romans 8. I bog down usually around verse 20. and then I pick it up again around 28 and can get to the end. But it's such an important chapter of Scripture. And this verse in 37 says, "No, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us." And to me, I have this picture of Israel always going in to conquer the people, to get the land. And occasionally God would say, you know, that they were also to take the plunder. Sometimes he forbade that, but sometimes he said, yes, you will take the plunder. You will not only conquer these people, but you will be enriched in the conquering. And I have had that experience after loss. I don't know if you have, but it's part of God's pattern and it's part of his character. And of course, if you're not familiar with Romans 8, this is where Paul has laid out for us the fact that there's no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus, that we have conquered sin because we are his. We are in the train of his robe in the victory parade, right? And so as Paul writes about this, you know, by the time he gets to verse 37, he's already affirmed that if the Spirit of Christ lives in you, that same Spirit that raised him from the dead will also give life to your mortal body, it says at one point. It talks about our adoption as sons and as children of God. It talks about how the whole creation has been subjected to frustration, not out of futility, but in the hopes, it says in verse 20, by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the glorious freedom of the children of God. Oh, Romans 8 is so wonderful. That may be my New Year's resolution for 2017 to finally get it all memorized. But Paul talks about all of the things and the setbacks and the difficulties and what we do suffer and all of the losses. But he talks also about God's plan for us, predestination, how he foreknew us, he justified us, he glorifies us. And he says, you know, if God is for us, who can be against us? In verse 31, no, in all these things, trouble, hardship, persecution, famine, nakedness, danger, sword, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. God's love, so, so powerful to carry us through times of sadness and loss. 1-800-811-3003. If you had the chance to hear our featured interview with Jules Green, you didn't hear the best part, which is how faith changed everything for her. And she did agree to the second part, and we will be airing the second part next week. So I hope you can join us again here on Cradle My Heart Radio. If you'll go to cradlemyheart.org, you'll find out information about Jules' background. And I hope you do that. I hope that you will support the people who are our guests on this program, because this truly is a labor of love. Ours is a nonprofit ministry. Just about everybody that we invite as a guest also is working out of that faith that compels us to speak truth. Not all of us who have been guests on this program, not all of us have an abortion experience, or one or two or several abortions. Many instead are simply laboring to help those and come alongside those who are in need and who are vulnerable and who are, you know, for whom there isn't a choice that is presenting itself because of the way the culture is going. And so it's just been a blessing since 2012. Everybody that we have interviewed, whether it be women who became teen moms, whether it be women like Jules who had so many difficulties, including suicide attempts. We've had many, many people on this program who have been that devastated by the abortion experience. But we've had people who have just been, in lay ministry, doing counseling. We've had people in the pregnancy help movement. All of us here to bolster and uphold the cause for life. So I hope you take advantage of those resources, because it's just been such a blessing for me through the years. I guess last month we passed our fourth anniversary without really marking it. September of 2012 is when we signed on. And we're also going to be starting a new outreach in earnest beginning November 1st. You'll be hearing on Faith Radio one-minute programs that will bring you a story of what's happening with people who have experienced unplanned pregnancy and chose life, people who placed their child for adoption, people who did have the abortion experience but found peace and comfort with God in the aftermath. So many stories. And, you know, everyone is different. This is what is amazing to me. Every story is so unique, really, just like our fingerprints. So 1-800-811-3003. And looks like we have a note about the verses in Joel 2:12-14. Joel 2:12-14. So I'm not familiar with that. I'm going to introduce you at the last minute of the program here to Kyle, who's working as our net op tonight and making things happen technically on the program. Kyle, tell me about Joel 2:12-14.
Sure, Ken. Thanks. Joel is one of my favorite references for finding hope through periods of mourning. And that starts off with verse 12 of chapter 2. And it says, after the day of the Lord, it's talking about all the judgments that the Lord is going to bring. And then he says a very profound statement. He says, verse 12, even now, declares the Lord, it says, return to me with all of your heart, with fasting and weeping and mourning. Rend your heart and not your garments. Return to the Lord your God, for he is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and abounding in love, and he relents from sending calamity. Who knows, he may turn and relent and leave behind a blessing, grain offerings and drink offerings for the Lord your God. And the thing that's significant about that is what he does afterwards, and that is he brings victory to his people. He turns them from an oppressed people in the remaining part of that chapter, into a people that overcomes their enemies. So he not only restores hope and provides for them, but he provides abundantly with victory. I just think it's an amazing testament to God's goodness and how in the darkest parts, even when God is proclaiming their hopelessness and the impending day of the Lord that he's bringing, it's not the end, and he's the one who promises that. that hopefulness and that, in fact, victory, which is the overcoming.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's so striking when a verse like that begins, even now, because it really tells us that whatever it is you're experiencing. Let's see if it looks like we have a caller. Do we have time to put him on the air? We've got about a minute and a half remaining. This happens to us so often. We get a call at the very last minute. Well, we'll try and get the caller on. I'll give you one more that has been very encouraging to me. Oh, Lord, you took up my case. You redeemed my life. That's Lamentations 3:58. The Lord does redeem our lives. Kathy, you've got 30 seconds to give us an encouraging verse. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kim. My verse is 2 Samuel 12, verses 22 through 23. And it's after David and Bathsheba's baby died. It says, David said, while the baby was still alive, I fasted and I cried. I thought, who knows, maybe the Lord will feel sorry for me and let the baby live. But now that the baby is dead, why should I fast? I can't bring him back to life. Someday I will go to him, but he cannot come back to me.
Beautiful, beautiful. 2 Samuel 12. Kathy, hang on the line and we'll get you a copy of the Hope in the Morning Bible. What a great note to end on. Please look at these verses. Open to the Psalms. Allow God to comfort you. Thanks for being with us. Please join us next week for part two with Jules Green here on Cradle My Heart Radio. Thanks for listening. Your support makes this podcast stream possible. Information is available at myfaithradio.com.